is November 13th, 2012, Monroe City Council meeting to order. Roll call, please, Edie.
Councilperson Daring. Cutback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Here.
Thank you. Okay, so we have a unique situation this evening where both the mayor and Mayor Pro Tem are absent this evening. And so we refer to our rules of the City Council rules of procedure. And if both the mayor and Mayor Pro Tem are absent, council members present shall elect one of their own members to serve as presiding officer until the return of the mayor or the Mayor Pro Tem. So at this time, I'll ask for nominations.
Councilman Wood.
Councilmember Cutback.
I would like to nominate Councilmember Williams.
Second.
Okay, so we have a first for Councilmember Williams, Councilmember Cutback, and a second, Councilmember Camp. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. So at this time, congratulations, Councilmember Williams. You can take over the meeting.
Payback.
You should recess 5 minutes for training.
Watch your head.
Yeah, well, let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next, we'll do comments from citizens. This time, set aside for you to speak to the City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. I do have some people signed up, and so Robert Martin, do you want to speak or did you just want to end?
My intention was to be give a testimony at the budget hearing.
Okay.
The budget hearing? Okay.
Public hearing?
Yes.
Okay. Diane Elliott?
Couple. Diane Elliott, 15550 174th Avenue, Southeast Monroe. A couple of things caught my eye on tonight's agenda. One was the appreciation for the police department, and I wanted to voice person my appreciation for the quick response and apprehension of the Hispanic youth that accosted me at Lake Tai Park. Forget the exact date, but they were so fast and I didn't even know we had ATVs. I mean, they just swarmed and caught the guy. He's was here illegally and he's been turned over to ICE, and I guess he's headed back south. But I wanted to take donuts, but I don't think I can do that. So anyway, my next that caught my eye was the possible or the filling in of the ponds over in the North Kelsey area, because I guess there's an estimated if you fill it in, you might be able to sell it for $1 million. But it would cost $250,000, and it kind of looks like, well, province needs a place to dump your dirt, their dirt, so trying to accommodate them. But with current budget issues, I'm wondering why we have to do this now. I mean, generally, you see signs, we'll build to suit or whatever. And another issue is that has this been checked, have the regulations that created these two ponds been checked? Is this an issue? You know, does the State Department of Ecology need to be contacted regarding? clerk, should we be spending $250,000 to create this infiltration system? I would think there's no urgency to do this at this time, and possibly regulations should be looked at in the meantime. That's all I have to say, but I would hope. And what caught my eye too is that the sidewalks would be retained as, what was it called, as part of the ambiance that was left, rather than walking through ponds that have now naturalized, that might be advantageous to properties that are being, you know, businesses that are building around them. You know, you look out from your doctor, your dentist's office, and it looks nice to see cattails and birds building nests and things like that. So I don't know what the urgency is, other than trying to help someone by disposing of their dirt. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Vicki Mullen.
Hi, Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street, Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98296. Speaking of things that catch eyes, this is on the, I was looking at the, under the final action, which is the, and I'm looking at the agenda item here. It's the discussion of the chain, what they're calling the rezone property on Chain Lake Road. I, to be honest, I don't, it's hard to come up here ahead of time sometimes, because if I don't understand this exactly, and I'm going to be waiting to hear what you all talk about, how it's discussed, because I was a little fuzzy on how this was all going to be, so I may be just totally before the cart, before the horse, so to speak, on this one. But I just wanted to say that I remember a lot of this discussion when this took place in 2009, and how, and with Steve Harris and the property, and my recollection of it with the legislative intent was to have it, that it was going to be senior housing or that type of thing. And so I don't know what exactly this is, you know, what the developer wants to know out of this, but if the idea was to have it be just straight single family without being senior, that's not my recollection of it. And so, but like I said, I'm not sure. I mean, I remember a lot of discussion about the traffic about that area, and how that being the way they were going to have it senior and multiple, they talked about having a lot of connectivity to the walkability to North Kelsey at the time, and they talked a lot about, you know, transit could pick up, and I just remember a lot of discussion on it. So I'm waiting to hear what you guys have to say about it, but I do remember there was a lot of information, and this looks like a very, they're making it sound like to you guys that it's a very time sensitive kind of thing, and I just want to remind you that you know, someone else's time sensitive doesn't mean that you have to necessarily act on it if you don't have all the information. Or, you know, so. And then on another note, I just wanted to make it clear. I've made it clear on a number of you know, Facebook pages and things, but I want to make sure that I say it publicly here as well for the record. I just want to make sure that Councilman Hanford, and if anybody else is of this opinion, it seemed like a lot of things that were in the newspaper came out that anything said in a confidential executive session would be confidential, and that is absolutely not correct. And I think that if anyone is under that impression, they need to call. I emailed you all with a direct line to the State Attorney General's office, to Tim Ford. He makes it very clear that that's absolutely not a correct statement, that not everything, once you close the door, does not mean that everything is confidential. And he even goes on to explain, I sent an attachment with you, at page 2, the last two paragraphs, explained to the city of Puyallup exactly what that meant. And I think it's a real teachable moment for everyone to maybe review and look at that, maybe even look at the city of Monroe having someone come in from open public, you know, like Toby Nixon from the open government, during maybe the sunshine week that's each week, to shine, you know, kind of light on government and see, and maybe revisit, have your attorney perhaps revisit exactly, because what has happened happened here in the past is a lot of times the attorneys will err on the side of one side, not maybe err, that they have a certain perspective to protect you, you know, from the citizens. But then the citizens on the other side want to have as much done in transparent and open session as they can. And then the other person that comes in and puts their heavy hand on it is your insurer. And your insurer in the past, even when the council had wanted to divulge things that had happened in the executive session, I mean, they all wanted to, they were going to vote on it, the insurer came down from, you know, your state pool and said, you can't, or we're going to not have your insurance. So this has been a longstanding issue in Monroe, and I think that it wouldn't might be advantageous for everybody and the public to be to have like a study session on that and have invite the public. So that's my suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fred Walter.
Good evening, members of the council. I'm Fred Walter, 692 Park Lane, and chair of the U.S. Home Safety Coalition. I'm here tonight to give you a quick briefing and rundown on what we've been doing since you were a great contributor to our fund to help promote our cause with Olympia. And the first out of the gate is the results of the election have been devastating to us and to transportation in the state of Washington. We've lost the Senate Transportation Chair, Mary Margaret Howland, who was a big backer of us in U.S. 2 improvements. We also lost Republican Representative Mike Armstrong from Wenatchee, who was the ranking member of the House Transportation Committee and also a huge backer of U.S. 2 safety improvements, and specifically the Monroe Bypass. So what I'm telling you is we're sort of back to square one. And that's very disconcerting right at the moment. There is no clear emergence yet of a new chair for both the Senate committee and the ranking membership of the House. And I have been meeting all week with different members in the transportation lobby group to see what's going to shake out. As early as this morning, I attended the Snohomish County Citizens for Improved Transportation meeting, of which I am a member, and that, I'll tell you, everybody's in kind of a state of shock over what happened and where we're going to go. Two things came out loud and clear. Representative Mike Sells was at our meeting, and he said two things that are obvious with the legislature. Number one, because of the McCleary Supreme Court decision, education is the number one issue facing the legislature and how to fund it, which means everything else takes last place as far as funding goes. And we kind of expected that. We participated, members of our committee participated in the last governor's task force trying to figure out ways to fund transportation, and no clear consensus has come forward yet, other than the reality that we're going to have to raise some taxes somewhere, somehow, because there's no zero money in the transportation budget now to do a thing, according to what they're telling us. Having said that, there are two things that I want to make you aware of that we are still pursuing aggressively, and that is the Monroe Bypass. And we had a really good year with the two, with both the Senate and the House on that issue, that recognizing the need for the bypass. It's just how we're going to make it happen. It's a $278 million project, and there was talk of making it a toll road and so forth, which I personally oppose, but that may be the only answer to getting it constructed. The second is that I recently returned from a trip to Sweden, and while there, I had an opportunity to observe their road system, and it's way ahead of ours. They have an unbelievable amount of roads that are just great to drive on. The one thing that jumped out at me is my wife and I drove from southern Sweden to northern Sweden with her cousins on a two-lane road that's almost identical to US 2, and right down the middle of it is a triple cable barrier system to prevent crossover crashes, and interspersed along the road are solar LED lights that are buried in the pavement, but at night that highway looked like an airport runway. And looked at that and started shooting pictures and said, that's exactly what we need on US 2 to prevent these crossover crashes, because the week we left, we had two failed crashes in 2 days on US 2 in September. When I came back, the first thing I did was contact Senator Haugen and Representative Armstrong, told them what we needed, and they said, you got it. No, we're going to do it. You got it. Well, they're not there now. But we are still going to fight for that because it's cost-effective to install that cable barrier system from Snohomish, at least east of Gold Bar, to prevent people from crossing over. Second thing, as I told you earlier, is the Monroe bypass. We are still working on that, so we haven't given up. The last thing I want to tell you about that you may have a real interest in and not much knowledge of is the coal train issue. All the emphasis is put on the coal trains going north and south from Seattle up to Bellingham. What people have failed to tell anybody is that those coal trains return back through Monroe 9 a day to start. That's going to increase the rail traffic through here substantially, and it's something this city needs to take a hard look at. There was a meeting December 13th in Seattle at the Convention Center. I see my time's up, but I gotta tell you this. I really believe the city of Monroe needs to take a position on these coal trains and take a hard look at them and participate in the conversation that's going on. SCIT, Snohomish County Committee for Improved Transportation, is drafting a letter right now in opposition to the proposed coal trains, because the number of trains starts out at 9 a day, 9 trips up, 9 trips back. That will double the next year and double the following year according to the projections we have been given. That's a lot of trains. And when you're talking a train that's a mile long, coming through Monroe and plugging up the siding wall, the other, because they're already running 23 trains a day through here. They've got to store the other trains somewhere so they can pass, and that's going to gum up all our intersections. So I would suggest you might have a conversation about that and look into it. And again, the meeting is the 13th of December. It's on the front page of the Herald, too, by the way, today. So, do you have any questions?
Actually, I do.
Councilman Gant.
Do you have a map or do you have access to a diagram showing the coal train paths so we know where will be going?
It goes up
through. It's going to go through along the I-5 corridor, I guess, and coming back through Monroe?
Yes, it goes north on the Burlington Northern Tracks.
Okay.
From Seattle through Marysville and on up through Stanwood to Bellingham. Then they come back into Everett and then come east from Everett. It's a loop. They're coming out of Wyoming.
Oh, okay.
And so they come across the southern part of the state, up north, back across the east part of the mountains, and back into Wyoming.
Okay.
And that's the information I was given.
If
I do not have a map, so.
Okay, if they do come up with a map, you can send it to the council.
Oh, yeah, I'd be happy to.
Great, appreciate it.
There's a lot of this, so.
Yeah.
That map. And that may come out of this hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all the people I have signed up, but if there's anyone else that would like to speak, now is your chance. And I'm so thrilled that former council member Ball is standing up, because I waited so long to be able to put you on a 5-minute timer.
I don't know if I was with you, but that would be the 5 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Tony Moore. I live at 517 Circle Drive, Monroe, Washington, 98272. I'm here to speak on final action number 4. And I was on council at the time and just want to reiterate what has been the recommendation of the staff, that the intent for that rezone was for senior housing only. That to do anything else should take another public hearing so the people who live in that community have a clear idea that there's going to be a major change taking place. The time we approved the rezone, it was for senior housing only. And as you can imagine, having senior housing going next door and having at a greater density than the surrounding zoning and having general use, we'll have two different guests. That's my comment.
Are you going to stick around for that topic?
Sure. Okay, so we'd like me to.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else? All right, we'll move.
How old are they?
It's about 6 minutes. All right, so moving on to the business and action items, we have an announcement, a proclamation for Police and Fire Week, so I'd like to read that. Whereas the Monroe Police Department and Fire Department personnel have taken an oath to dedicate their lives to protect and serve the citizens in Monroe, and whereas these devoted Monroe Police Department and Fire Department personnel are first responders on the front lines in emergency situations, and whereas our dedicated first responders show a willingness to help all those in need and the courage to endure whatever ordeal they face, and whereas our first responders freely give a part of themselves every day in performing their duty to protect citizens and make our city a safer place to live, work, and play, and whereas hard work and commitment is the mission of public safety, the models of the police department and the fire department are, the Monroe Police Department is dedicated to the pursuit of excellence in providing professional law enforcement services, and the Monroe Fire District No. 3 is dedicated to protect life, property, and the environment through education, prevention, and emergency response to medical, fire, and hazardous materials. Maximum effort. We strive to accomplish this mission by maintaining operational readiness, by providing a highly trained and physically fit workforce, by promoting safety in all endeavors, and providing the necessary resources to adequately protect those we serve. Therefore, I, Robert G. Zimmerman, do hereby issue this recognition as a true expression of appreciation and a symbol of gratitude for the exceptional quality of public services as you continue to dedicate yourselves to keeping our citizens and community safe. Now, therefore, I do proclaim the week of November 12th through 18th, 2012, as Police and Fire Appreciation Week in the City of Monroe, and I urge all citizens to join me in this special observance. All right, next up we have the public hearing, the second public hearing on the 2013 budget. Diane?
There is no formal presentation for this hearing. This is the second and final chance for the public to speak their mind on any thing regarding the 2013 budget. And that's it.
So I will open it up to the public. I have one person signed up to speak. So Robert Martin.
Thank you, Mayor. Temporary pro tem, I believe.
It's like a third removed, so.
Yes. Mayor and Council and citizens and staff, thank you for a moment. My name is Bob Martin. I'm president of the Monroe Area Club. I've delivered to the Council a brief letter that I'd like to read so that the citizens and staff can hear it as well as the Council. This is to Honorable Robert Zimmerman, Mayor and the Monroe City Council. The Monroe Rotary Club wishes to use this moment to express appreciation on behalf of the club, the community, and many children who have enjoyed activities and learned of life at the Rotary Field. The City of Monroe and the citizens of this community can be tremendously proud of the facility that has resulted from the support and cooperation of so many. With this letter, Monroe Rotary wants the Council to know that the last major component of the facility remains to be completed. It is the club's intent to pursue construction of the restroom and concession stand building and to continue cooperation with the City of Monroe to achieve this goal. Your Parks and Recreation Director, Mike Farrell, has graciously attended club meetings and met with me individually to help us explore opportunities and avenues to complete this project. We appreciate his involvement very much. We agree with Mr. Farrell that the prefab building continues to be the favored approach due to the efficient use of time compared to on-site construction processes. As of this writing, we understand that the proposed budget contains $50,000 as the city's contribution to this project. I'm here to thank you for that allocation and to express the club's interest that you continue to fund that line item in the 2013 budget. The club cannot promise that the project will be completed in 2013, but we are proceeding in that direction. We're applying for grants and community fundraising efforts to assemble the additional approximately $80,000 necessary to combine with the city's allocation.
thank you again for supporting the youth, particularly the disabled youth of your community. Monroe Rotary Club looks forward to participating with you to complete this much-loved and very much important community project. Signed, Robert Martin, President of Monroe Rotary Club. And I'd be happy to answer any questions or any comments you have to make.
I see no lights, so
you're welcome.
Thank you very much. Ryan, we have one light. Councilman Effer.
I just want to thank you for with you and your whole mission and goal. We are very appreciative that you're in our community. Likewise, the field you have is a jewel, and known internationally through Rotary as just an outstanding example of what happens when a community and a club get together and do the right thing and work like crazy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, I have no one else signed up to speak, but if there's anyone else who would like to address council on the budget, now would be the time to do so. Okay, so with that, I will take a motion to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Councilmember Cuddeback, seconded by Councilmember Hanford to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Diane, do you have anything else to add to that? So if there's no other questions on that, then I will also take a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Cuddeback, seconded by Councilmember Hanford to close the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So, moving right along. Presentation of utility funds and CIP funds budget. That is also Diane.
Here. We're having technical difficulties. Tonight we're going to talk about the capital improvement project funds and the utility funds for the 2013 budget. And these are the funds we're covering tonight. On the right are all the utility funds. On the left are the governmental funds. We have our general CIP fund. CIP is capital improvement projects. We're General Park Streets, we have the North Kelsey Development Fund and Debt Fund. And then we have Water, Sewer, and Storm. They have operating funds and CIP funds. Then we have Solid Waste and Fund, which is just an operating fund. And then the debt Revenue Bond Debt Reserve. And those are the funds we'll be covering tonight. The General CIP Fund, the purpose of this fund is to implement the City Campus Master Plan and any other projects that aren't parks or streets. It's sort of a catch-all. And for 2013, we do not have any appropriations in the budget. We have $435,000 sitting in this fund right now. I just want to bring this up because I think later on in the year, in 2013, we will be bringing forward the City Campus Master Plan, dusting it off, and bringing it to council for discussion, all because we are now starting to have some issues with this building and the police building. And so it looks like, because times have been tight and we've been busy with other CIP projects, we have not been doing this. We have been doing small parts of the implementation of the master plan, like the water fill station and the fuel station, but we need to start really looking at it and setting a plan and a financing plan. And so I think in 2013 this will be brought to your study sessions, and we will be talking about this. So
Right now, there's nothing appropriate for 2013, but I have a feeling that maybe we'll have a budget amendment during 2013, and this might be changing. But for the budget right now, nothing. The Park CIP fund appropriated for 2013 is $50,000 for the Miracle Field, and also $45,000 to the Parks Master Plan. Now, that $45,000 was not in the preliminary budget you were given. It's going to be in the final budget that's being presented to you next on the 20th. It was my error that it was left out. Mike had it in his budget worksheets, and I just missed the boat and didn't have it in the preliminary budget. But it is supposed to be in the budget. And after that's in the budget, there's a restricted fund balance in that fund of $25,000 for paths and trails. It's part of the condition of state RCW for the fuel all the fuel tax we receive. We have to set aside 0.0042 for paths and trails, and so that's how much we have accumulated for that. We put in about $1,400 a year to that. The ending fund balance in this fund is $553,000 to be used for future parks CIP projects that are in the comp plan. The street CIP fund has grant revenues of $489,000 and expecting GMA fees estimated at $321,000. Those GMA fees reflect the added growth that's coming to the city because, like in 2012, it's about $14,000. So this is quite a jump. So we're expecting things to start kicking in with Providence and Walmart and all the new projects coming. Capital construction projects appropriate for 2013 are $1.2 million. They include the MOO 2 project, which is the main Old Owen Highway 2 intersection improvements, the street portion of the Fremont utility replacement, Chain Lake Road pedestrian bike path, and the Tierney Street extension to Woods Creek. So we figure that we'll have an ending fund balance of $84,000 at the end of this year after those projects are worked on. You have questions?
Oh, yeah, just the Chain Lake pedestrian.
Uh-huh.
What was that again?
Chain Lake Road pedestrian bike path.
Have we talked about that previously, or has that been presented?
Yeah, that's the continuation of the 10-foot trail that's along the west side of Chain Lake that goes up to St. Clair Heights.
And where would it be? Where would it go to?
Actually, there was grant money available,
sure.
And it's actually just to buy the right of way for that, hopefully all the way up to Brown Road.
Okay, so buy right of way to Brown Road,
yes.
But not necessarily putting the path.
Not the path.
Okay,
no.
Thank you.
I just want to mention most of the projects that I talked about for the CIP funds. What I'm talking about is just what's appropriate for 2013. Mm-hmm. Most of these projects go more than one calendar year. The North Kelsey Development Fund, we're expecting to get proceeds from land sales of about $8.9 million for the year. Included in that is the Walmart saving deal. $7.9 million is going to be transferred over to the debt fund to pay off debt. The contingency fund is going to get about $1 million of it, and that's per the resolution the council adopted earlier this year regarding how to use the money from the land sale proceeds. Also in this fund is $50,000 for environmental review of the old dump site. We need to do a review. We need to have environmental review done to see what's in that soil, if it's hazardous or not, so that we can figure out how much mitigation work needs to be done to make that land usable again. And
Diane,
yes,
yeah. At this point, that's just the documentation review.
That's just to do the.
They're not doing anything physical.
No, it's just for a review to be done.
It's the second stage. You've got a couple of those too. So this is $7,500 for the literature review. And this is also includes the second phase.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is being paid for with REIT fund. Real estate excise tax funds are being transferred into this fund to the tune of $50,000 to pay for that. There's also a sewer line connection being done in the North Kelsey area for $100,000. And then there's sales commissions and attorney fees of $361,000. And Legacy Debt Fund is getting that money from the land sale being transferred from the development fund, paying off a bunch of principal and the required interest. Remaining debt will be $3.5 million on the books, and that will be paid off with future land sales in 2014 and beyond. The utility funds. Utility funds are different than all the governmental funds that we've been discussing up to this point. Utility funds are funded by rates, not taxes. So we have complete control over what the rates are, and the rates you want to cover all your costs. That would be your cost for operations, as well as a portion of the rates cover capital maintenance for the big capital projects that the utilities have to do. A portion of the rates, some of the money comes in their connection fees, but some of it is from rates that pays for capital improvements. So the rates have to cover both those things. Per RCWs, the utility funds, each fund has to be self-supported by the rates and fees. It is not; it cannot be a tax-supported fund. And we also, because we have revenue bonded debt, we have bond covenants we have to follow. And the bond covenant requires that we have a ratio of revenues to operating expenditures of 1.25. You take your expenditures, you subtract out your debt service payments and your transfers to the capital fund, and what's left is your operating. And that has to be less than your revenues. You have to operate, per the bond covenant, we have to operate utilities in the black. We cannot go into the red with utilities. So for the water fund, the water operating fund, revenues are anticipated to be $3.6 million. That $3.6 million includes a rate increase of 5.6%. And the reason for that is we purchase all our water from the city of Everett. Everett is bumping up 7%, their water rates by 7%. And so in order to cover that 7% increase, we have to increase our rates by 5.6%. The expenses of $4.2 million include debt service payments of $634,000. All our utilities are highly leveraged with debt. We're not over-leveraged, but we don't want to take on any more debt until we pay down some of our existing debt. Thank goodness for the reserve policy that you guys adopted. We now have restricted fund reserves of $406,000, and that meets the requirement of the reserve policy. In addition to that, the ending fund balance is anticipated to be $377,000. Now, when you're looking at this operating budget, you see, wait a minute, revenues of $3.6 million and expenses of $4.2 looks a little lopsided, right? Well, also included in that $4.2 is an expense. Because of fund accounting, it shows up as an expense, but it's a transfer of $800,000 from the water fund to the water CIP fund for the capital maintenance. And so if you take out that $800,000, you're back down in the black again. So it's not an operating it's not an operating expense. It's a transfer of funds. But because we do fund accounting in government, it shows up as an expense. So then you have your water CIP fund. It's getting the transfer from the water fund and the $800,000. Also, and we're estimating capital fees of $645,000, which it, again, reflects the growth that we're expecting this next year. Capital construction projects for 2013 are estimated to cost $392,000, and that includes, where's my water? Oh, the water portion of the Fremont utility replacement. Fremont Street project is a big project that each one of the utilities is contributing to. Restricted fund balance for emergencies is $36,000. That meets the reserve requirement. Within that, you have an ending fund balance of $5 million to be spent on capital projects in later years. There's a water comp plan, and it spells out what projects we should be doing, and we follow it. We can't do everything all at once, so we carry over the capital money to the next year to do those projects. If I'm not making sense on any of this, please stop me, because all these utilities, each one is pretty much the same. They all follow the same track. Here, again, the sewer operating fund, $5.2 million in revenues. includes the rate increase of 14% per resolution that was adopted last year to cover costs of the wastewater treatment plant improvements. We issued that $15 million in revenue bonds, so, you know, we have to pay that off now. The good news is sewer won't be backing up into people's homes, so we kind of had to do it. This includes debt service payments, the expenses of $1.8 million. That's the highly leveraged debt that we have that we're trying to knock out, and we will get there eventually. It looks bad right now because we just recently issued all this debt, but we will be getting through. We have a very solid plan of how to handle this. Restricted reserves of $421,000, that's per the reserve policy, plus an ending fund balance of $204,000. And again, the expenses are more than the revenues because also in this utility as well, we are transferring $800,000 over to the CIP fund. It shows up as an expense in the operating, but it's really just a transfer of funds. And so you get over to the CIP fund for sewer, and you see the transfer there for the $800,000, plus expecting $1 million in capital fees. So that's nice, healthy revenues coming in for this fund. Capital construction projects of $1.4 million, and that is the sewer portion of the Fremont Street utility replacement. Restricted fund balance of $149,000 per the reserve policy, plus an ending fund balance of $3 million to be used for future capital projects in the ensuing years. Stormwater fund. Revenues of $1.5 million, and yay, no rate increases on this utility because we have enough rate increases already. Expenses $1.6 million, restricted fund balance of $182,000, plus the ending fund balance of $109,000. This includes debt service payments of $104,000, and the reason the expenses are higher than the revenues is because $200,000 is being transferred from the operating fund to the CIP fund. And so that $200,000, if you took that away, you would see the operating. So the stormwater CIP fund, we're getting the $200,000. Capital construction projects are $1 million, and that's the Fremont utility replacement. All that's going to be the big project, the big utility project for 2013. And this fund has an ending fund balance of $659,000. The solid waste fund, this is where we collect the garbage fees, and we have a spring cleanup event, and we pay Allied, and we do all the customer service for garbage. Citizens call us with their changes and requests, and Allied does not do the customer service portion. So the revenues are $3.2 million, no rate increases. Allied's contract, they do the rate increases effective September 1st of each year. This last September, they hit us with a 3% increase. I have a feeling they're going to hit us with another one. However, we are able to absorb that from our fund balance, and we are not passing that on to the citizens. The citizens will see no rate increase in their solid waste bill. Expenses are $3 million, restricted fund balance of $366,000 per the reserve policy, and with a healthy ending fund balance of $391,000. We're continuing, at least I have put in for the budget, to do the community spring cleanup event versus the curbside. Big difference in cost. The curbside cleanup costs about $65,000. The community event costs us about $20,000. So huge savings, and it's an opportunity for other groups to get involved too. Each year we're going to build on it and make it have more and more services. You know, we're going to try to get like battery recycling and hazardous paint. We're going to work with the county on that. And each year we'll build on it. We had such a success with the last one that we're going to build on it and make it a bigger and better thing each year. So the rate increases from Ally, we're absorbing, you can see there's ending fund balance that we can absorb some from the reduced cost of the spring cleanup. We used to have four people doing customer service up front here in City Hall. We now have three, and we're going to keep it at that level. So due to that belt tightening and the healthy ending fund balance, we don't have to raise rates for even though I anticipate Allied's going to raise rates, we will not have to pass that on to the customer. The revenue bond reserve fund, this is required with our bond covenants of money to be set aside, just sitting in a reserve fund earning interest for to prove that in case of an emergency, we could still meet our debt service on the bonds. There's a few shenanigans that I do each year, a mathematical test that I do, and it figures, it's a formula to figure out the amount. Right now, $2,014,000 is the amount we have to have in. We have it in. We are able to transfer $100,000 back to the utilities. As we pay down our debt, the requirement changes. It'll slowly decrease as we pay down principal. So each year, I'm hoping to transfer some money back to the utilities from what they put in for the bonds. So that's the end of my presentation. I did a presentation on the governmental funds. This was the utility and CIP funds. We're having the first reading of the budget ordinance on the 20th. So what I need from council is to know, is there anything you need me to bring back to you, anything you don't understand, or anything you want further discussion on? Have I missed anything?
Councilman Hanford has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Couple of things. As far as your last question, I'm clear on everything you presented. It's very clear. Two other things. I think several of us agree that the spring community cleanup event was a great success. So I think just recalling past conversations. The other thing was that as far as communicating the rate increases for the water and sewer, I was not around as a council member for the last increases that we did, but I heard about it.
Yeah.
And I said, I honestly don't know the reasons why. So now that we're coming up to another one, I remember how I heard about that before, and now I'm here. So it would be great to communicate clearly to the city, I'm assuming through the bills, you know, uh-huh. The reasoning and, you know, maybe okay. A warning, not just January 1st.
Absolutely, yeah.
Here you go.
I can put a flyer in with the December bills, telling them that it's effective January 1st, so they'll see it on their February bill. But I can put a flyer in with the December bills that explains why the need for the increase.
I think that would be more notice okay. ahead of time. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
Thank you.
Flyer in December bills. Okay. Councilmember Cutabat.
Thank you. Can I have one question? Sorry, I should have asked it when you were going through, but the Norm Kelsey Development Fund,
yeah.
There was sewer line connection, $100,000. What exactly is that for?
I'm going to have to defer. Do you know what the sewer line connection is for Norm Kelsey?
Is it?
Oh, that's the,
yeah.
Because of the short plot that we did in order to create the lots, and one of the requirements is when you do a short plot, you have to provide sewer, water, and storm connections to each of the lots. And so that's putting in the sewer main along the south side of the Providence property. And if you go up there right now, you can see the big hole in the middle of the street. It's been patched, but just behind right around it.
Okay, and is that the cost for all of the property up there, the $100,000 is?
Right, that's to do sewer for all the lots.
And that will reach all the lots we currently have.
Correct.
On them. So that's a one-time
yes.
fee. Okay. All right. Thank you.
No more questions. Thank you.
Okay. And feel free to call me anytime or email me if you have any questions later on, if something occurs to you that you want to know about.
Thank you, Diane.
Thanks. Thank you, Diane.
All right, Brad, oh, looks like you're up.
Okay.
Right away purchases.
Diane, you do that.
Oh, okay.
Fremont, the big project that Diane mentioned that we're doing next year that we're working on right now in the design. We came to the council a while ago and told you it was going to cost us about $91,000 to purchase all the right-of-way. And so we have, there's five parcels. Two of the five parcels have agreed to us, with us on the price and negotiated the price with us, and we have the agreements ready. The other two parcels have not. And I was waiting for all of it to come get negotiated so we can come back with you and say how much it was going to cost, because you had mentioned that you didn't want to spend that limited amount of money on that. So there is the possibility, though, that if we are attempting to get federal funds in the future for this project, which we always are up for if we can, that if we don't purchase the right of way as the agreements get done, we cannot get federal funds because we want to follow the correct procedures. And so the question being is, do you want to purchase each property by itself as they become available, or wait until it's all done at the end? And we probably should go into executive session if you want to know any more than that about dollars and things like that, because that might affect the price that someone would ask us for.
So, Brad, there's five pieces that we...
Actually, I think there's four. Sorry. Four.
So two are done?
Two are done. Still... Two we're waiting for.
Okay.
Sorry, no, there was five. The Old Abelotto, the PUD, the school district, the hair salon, actually six, hair salon, the housing hope property, and then the old junkyard down at the end of the road. And we've got two of them so far.
So what happens if we agree to the purchase of the two and we can't come to agreement on the other ones?
Then you have wide right of way that's not doing anything. That's not, at the moment, doing anything useful for the city. That's why we were kind of waiting to see if we could do the whole thing, to do the wider road to provide that extra width for the bicycles on the road.
Yeah, but, and so your concern is that if we wait till we get them all done, then we forego some potential for some potential.
We won't be able to get federal money to work on that project. Even though the federal money is not for that, the feds won't give you money if any part of the process for a road was not done up to their standards.
Thank you. My question was to ask, is this an appropriate topic for exec session, because it does concern purchase of property?
Absolutely.
If you want to go any more than just saying yes, buy the two, or no, wait, then we need to go into executive session.
What's the time constraint on this? Or is there one?
The federal regulations say as soon as possible. Once you get the agreement, you're supposed to purchase the property as soon as possible.
We certainly have legal counsel here next week. If council's preference is to wait and do an executive session with legal counsel here, we are allowed to do it without him. But it's council's pleasure.
Yeah, I would suggest, because I had written that comment down earlier when I was going through stuff, that this would be a topic that we should discuss further if we're going to talk further about price, and that we handle that in the executive session. So if we wait until next week, that's fine with me to wait. If it's not time sensitive, just to wait till next week.
I would also prefer that. Seemed to be the consensus, so that'll next week's agenda and bring it back. Thanks, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to final action number one, ordinance setting property tax levy, second and final reading. That's Diane.
This is the property tax levy with the ordinance with no increase to the property taxes. This is the final reading. We have to file it with the county before the end of this month in order to collect taxes next year.
Councilmember Hanford.
like to make a motion to accept a second and final reading, ordinance number 021/2012, fixing the amounts of tax, amount of taxes to be levied by the city for the calendar year 2013 with no increase over the 2012 tax levy.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Hanford and a second by Councilmember Cutback. Any other comments? Seeing no lights, I'll ask Administrator Brazel to read the final formal title.
Ordinance number 021-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, fixing the amount of taxes to be levied by the city for the calendar year 2013.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. All right. We skipped number two, so next is final action number three, the North Kelsey Pond. And that's City Administrator Brazel.
Thank you very much. This is topic we've discussed on several occasions. It's in regard to lot 8 of the recent short plat, and currently it's two stormwater ponds that were constructed to not only handle the storm runoff from Chain Lake Road, but part of Turney Place and the Lowe's building. Once those ponds were created, Lowe's decided that they could handle their stormwater on site. So the size of the ponds were built to handle all three areas. Well, obviously now they're only handling Chain Lake and Turney Place, so we've had lots of discussions whether or not to fill those in and infiltrate the existing stormwater that goes in there, because they are way oversized, and it's not the best use of that property. It was looked at that point in time, and council's decision was to leave those ponds as they are and worry about other land sales. Since that time, staff has continued to look at that as things are being developed. Now that the short plat is finalized, we now realize that if we are going to ever have the option to fill those ponds in, we need to make that decision at this juncture or fairly soon, because the only place to, or the best place, I should say, to infiltrate that water is under one of the existing lots in front of Lowe's that the city currently owns. We don't have an offer on it or anything at this point in time. So an estimate was put together of $250,000 to do the infiltration system. The estimate of land sale for lot 8 was around $1 million. So there's definitely some value to selling that lot. It's a better use of the property, and it helps the surrounding property values as well. The trail amenities, things like that, could still be preserved if those two ponds were filled in. Currently, the Providence project does not have extra material that they are going to need to get rid of. They've taken a closer look at that project and decided to build a grade, and so they're not going to be excavating material at this point. But in the future, if other lots do build out, there's potential to utilize that material as fill if it's suitable. Again, that is something down the road that is potential. In order to move forward on this, we would have to do SEPA and some of the other reviews that are required to fill those lots. But at this point in time, we want to get in front of council, have the discussion again, because should we get other proposals in on the lot in front of Lowe's, we will be under a time crunch to make a decision. So we didn't want to be in that situation. We wanted to get this in front of the council earlier. So we're here for questions tonight. If council would like to make a motion and direct staff to work on this, there is a recommended action. But at this point, it's council discussion.
Thank you. Councilmember Kim?
I'm sorry, not looking for a motion on it? Or
if you got a motion, that would be great. We can move forward. But again, I understand, you know, from council's point of view, this is fairly new. We've just recently brought this back up, And so if you want to sit on it for another week or two, that is entirely fine. But we did prepare a motion this evening for council.
Councilmember Cutback?
Thank you. Would we build the system first and then, I mean, what's the ideal system? Because I know originally we were looking at filling that, and then in the meantime, what happens? You know, so walk me through that a little bit. Would it be before we even put fill in that pond right now, we would have to have a system in place? Do we redirect the stormwater elsewhere? So kind of walk me through that one.
We've kind of talked that over. I'll let Brad speak to it a little more.
Yes, since the pond is currently being used by Cherney Place and Cherney Road, it would be necessary to find someplace else to put it before you started filling it in. So that's the important thing to do is, you know, before someone offers to buy some property for us, we don't want to be in the middle of, you know, working with them and go, oh, by the way, you know, we need some of the stuff that you want, so we want to get that done. If that's what the council wants to do, is to have that in place before either, you know, we sell more property or we start filling in.
So what you're telling me is we would find another place, build it, and then fill?
And then fill, correct.
And then fill. So that would be the timeline. How long does it take to build another system on another lot that we have? I know you put the cost of about $200,000.
Yeah, once we decide how to do it, where to do it, and if the weather is good, I mean, it would be a couple of weeks of, you know, solid work. But that would also depend on what else we're doing.
Councilman Gamble?
Oops, hold on.
Oh, go ahead.
You cut me off. No, I have one more question, sorry.
That was a long pause.
I was gathering my thoughts. So we had a community member comment about, you know, regulations and making sure we took a look at them. So I heard Gene mention CEPA review. Walk me through kind of the steps we would do as a city. What's the cost to that? Is there a cost to us of doing those reviews? And if so, what would that be?
Staff time
is
the cost. You know? So the first thing we look for is we have to do some geotechnical work too, probably. And first thing we do is check groundwater levels to see if it's possible to do it. Then find infiltration rates, because the infiltration rate depends on how big of an area you need to infiltrate the water. And then we go through the permitting process. And also at the same time, we need some place that won't impact another lot. So we get, you know, add one lot, we lose a lot. So, you know, we have to get it somewhere that it's along the road or somewhere where it'd be in a parking area or a setback area, so it doesn't limit where our building can be put on another lot. Then we go through the permitting process, and then probably at this cost, we have to go out to bid, and then have construction done.
So it sounds like you've got a few hoops.
Yes, yeah.
Even to investigate to see where the spot would be. Is what you're asking. Okay, thank you.
Councilman Gamble.
I'm trying to remember, Gene, when because this is the second and final reading, right? Mm-hmm. Am I reading this wrong?
No, the last time this was discussed was in 2011.
June of 2011.
At that point in time, council's pleasure was to go ahead and work on the other lots, getting those sold. A year later.
Oh, sorry, I was mixing headlines there. Sorry.
Okay, good. Again, the main thing on this is the ponds that are existing are way oversized for their intent. So, again, it's poor use of property.
Councilman Hepburn?
I'd like to play the move to extend past 8 p.m. for our action on portion of meeting.
Sir. Okay. Motion made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Camp. Was that to extend the business and action portion of the meeting past 8 o'clock?
Correct.
Any comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0.
I also want to make a motion to direct staff to find an alternative location to handle the existing stormwater currently directed to Lot 8 in the matter that best maximizes land values of the North Kelsey properties.
Second. Motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Camp, to direct staff to find an alternative location to handle the existing stormwater currently directed to Lot 8 in a matter that best maximizes land values of North Kelsey properties. Before we vote, I do have a couple questions. So I don't know if it's for Gene or Brad. We've talked about this several times, and cost has always been the biggest reason why we haven't done it. What has changed? I think from the email we got previously was that we thought we had fill dirt that was going to be at no cost. If that doesn't happen, has something else changed that kind of pushes us more towards the forefront?
No, but the potential of future fill existing, and then, you know, we still have another piece of property we talked about earlier, the existing landfill site. There's material on there that is not part of the landfill. It was just left over and wasn't mined out, so there's potential material there that the city owns that could be trucked over there. The reality is, again, is that we have an opportunity here to make a decision that'll, I believe, be the best interest of the North Kelsey area. It'll increase property values. It'll better utilize the property that we have. And if we don't move now, that kind of limits us as to future decisions on that lot.
Okay. And the current pole that's there is quite large. What's the expectation as to about the size that we would need to displace that?
We're actually looking at infiltrating it, so it would be underground. Mr. Fowler referenced doing some geotechnical work, and basically that would tell us what type of infiltration rates we have, and that would dictate the size of the infiltration system.
Okay, and then my last question is the $250,000 number that we're talking about, that's to take this from talking about it to having it be complete, is that correct?
In a rough sort of way.
Okay, so can you just kind of give us an indication of where we start incurring costs versus, you know, sending staff off to go investigate this? It doesn't sound like we're signing up for a $250,000 expenditure tonight, but can you give us some idea of kind of how the timeline and the cost would fall out?
The first thing we need to do is the geotech, pretty much. So that's probably, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 up front, you know, so next month kind of thing.
Okay.
Is Jacob waiting for that?
No.
Okay.
This is Mr. Sachs.
Okay. Well, I just was wondering, Brad, if you were elaborating on the requirement of the short flat to provide stormwater and how the sequence of events may be that if the pond exists at the time of purchase, that can create some complications.
Right. I think I mentioned that briefly, is that if we... The state law requires that you provide, as a developer of the property, that have utilities available to the lots, which currently they are. If someone buys the property and says, you know, I'm buying this piece of property, I have stormwater, and we, you know, turns out that that's the best spot to put the infiltration system, it's kind of too late after they've already decided to buy it from us. May impact the purchase price, things like that. So, you know, it's best to get this done soon so we don't end up hurting ourselves with the sale of the property. The other thing is, you know, when we were looking at it in 2011, we had put it immediately north across Turney Place. There was that lot there that was originally going to be one pad with a large parking lot. That it fit underneath that, but now that we've, based on other people who have looked at that property, that they wanted smaller lots, that's kind of harder to do, and now we're looking at doing it along Journey Place, where it would be to the west of the road that goes to Lowe's, that along that frontage of Journey Place in what would be the building setback, and so therefore, you know, we won't hurt any of the property value by putting it in there, not limiting where they would have built it.
Okay. So just to be clear, we're not at, by the action we take tonight, we're not signing up for a $250,000 bill.
No.
We're just going through the process to investigate what the next steps are.
Finding out how much it is actually going to cost me. You know, you can also do, you know, we're going to get $1 million for this. Cost $250,000 to put it in is going to
lower the value of that property so we can get a whole picture of what the net cost is or the net benefit.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Cutback.
Thank you. I was just going to say I'm going to vote for this motion tonight because I do think we have a duty to investigate it and look into it. We were kind of looking at a time-sensitive crunch. We don't want to be in that position. We want to look at it. Is there another option? Best to look at it now before we sell property, obviously. So I will be voting for that. Thank you.
Okay, with no other lights, we'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thanks, Gene. Next item, I believe, is Brad.
In 2010, the Planning Commission and City Council investigated some property up on Chain Lake Road, sort of kitty corner from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. At that time, it was zoned R4, and the property owner at that time wanted to have it rezoned to MR6000. And came in with a proposal to put assisted living facility on that piece of property. The City Council passed an ordinance that changed the zoning but required a development agreement to be signed. The property owner has since not become the property owner anymore, and it's been returned to the bank, and there's actually somebody out looking at purchasing that property right now and interested in what they can actually do on it. If you looked at the development agreement, and with that by itself, it looked like you could do assisted living, retirement housing, single family housing, or type 1 group homes. However, if you read the ordinance itself said, after looking at the proposal that was done for the assisted living facility, we think any of the other allowed uses in MR6000 should not be allowed there, hence we need a development agreement. So just coming back to the council to confirm that the legislative intent of that ordinance was to limit the use to assisted living / retirement housing rather than just prohibiting multifamily that's not assisted living. Did I make that clear or did I just confuse everyone?
Well, I recall those discussions, and we had somebody speak on that earlier. There was quite a bit of discussion at the time about that was the purpose of what the development was going to be, and I think that appeased a lot of the people in the area, that it was, you know, they weren't going to have some wild and crazy parties, and these weren't going to be out there all the time, hopefully. And so there was quite a bit of discussion on that, if I recall. What exactly is the new developer looking to do? Are they looking to see if that's still in force, or are they asking for something different?
The first choice is single family with no restrictions on age or disability allowed. That's his first choice. And the second one is, if that's not, is it still okay to do the development agreement, which would have to come back from the council for another ordinance, because the development agreement that was adopted was person-specific as opposed to just being a general one. So I would have to come back for a council action to amend the ordinance to create a new development agreement. So that's kind of two-part, I guess. And then the third part from staff is, do you still want to go with this, or do you want to change it back to R4 like it was initially?
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. Is there a way you can show on the screen there? I'm looking at page 3, and this map isn't quite clear as to where. I can picture where it is compared to the church, but I'm wondering about access, if it has access to the 143rd bump in?
Yes.
The cul-de-sac?
The plan was for the development that was presented to us to take access off the Mountain Ridge Road now, which comes off of Chain Lake Road, with only an emergency access to Chain Lake Road, because it's close to the curve there.
So,
yeah. So basically, access would come off right next to the number that's just 280-73-100.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the entrance to the site.
Is that a little cutout there, it looks like? Mountain Ridge Road?
Yeah, the little gray thing going down is Mountain Ridge Road.
Okay. So, as far as
it's clear that the context is assisted living home. My question is, because in the letter that the developers had taken single family housing out of the middle of that sentence, put it in the beginning of the sentence, were you talking at that time about single family housing for assisted living housing, or were you talking about integrating just single family housing within them?
I believe, if memory serves, that it was contingent upon an assisted living center and housing that would support that, if that's, for others to concur with that.
Yeah. Much like Merrill Gardens, which has the cottages in front, right, kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't recall the intent was single family homes as well as assisted living, that was never the contingency placed upon the rezone.
As I read it, that's the context I read it in. As I read the letter from the potential developer, it looks like they want single family housing and then senior or assisted living as a separate. That clarifies that for me. Thanks.
What would be, Councilmember Cutler.
Thank you. Reading this cover sheet and remembering the conversation, I agree that it was specific about senior housing and assisted living at the time, not simply residential or single family homes. If I read the cover sheet, it states Section 1 of the Ordinance 015-2010 appears to limit the allowed uses to only retirement housing or assisted living in either single-family housing or Type 1 group homes. I think that takes precedence over an unsigned development agreement that was person-specific, that now that person does not own the property. So, you know, a couple other items is, I agree with a community member who stated that if we're going to change that ordinance significantly, which it would in this case, we should probably have a public hearing or do some more public input around that. And unfortunately, in this case, we can't meet the developer's timeline. It sounds like he needs an answer tonight to be able to do something tomorrow. That isn't my first priority. The first priority for me is looking at the intent at the time, looking at the ordinance we have on the books right now, and then, you know, looking at that specific development agreement, which again is unsigned, correct?
Actually, it was signed by the original.
Oh, it was signed.
It was signed, but it was never recorded.
Okay.
And so now it's never, today. Yeah.
So it was never recorded, and now that property owner does not own the property. Right. So I think if we're going to look at changing this, we need to go through some more hoops rather than just decide tonight.
And Brad, the potential purchaser is, from what I understand, is just asking for clarification before they make their purchase decision. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I'm not seeing anything in here that says if it's not assisted living, they're not going to buy the property.
No, they just want to.
Yeah.
So they're doing. Yeah. So there's no surprises when if they purchase it and come in with the building permit, we say, no, that's not what that meant.
So based on your recommended action then, is your recommended action, the motion is before us, that we keep it as it was with the original intent?
If that's...
Yeah, I agree with what some of the others said, that I don't know how we could change that without going back through the process again, because there was a lot of input from various people during that time, so... Okay. Councilman, I don't know who was first, so I'll take Councilman Campbell.
Thank you. So in this case, if the developer were to purchase the property, they would have to change it, they would have to go through, the normal change requirements, permit requirements.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Currently, right now, it's still zoned R4, because the development agreement was never put into place.
Okay, so where 6,000 is...
It doesn't exist, right.
Okay.
So if they decide they just want to build, four houses per acre, more or less, they can purchase it and do that. If they decide that they want to do assisted living, they can purchase the property and, you've sort of indicated that you're still interested in that. Then we'd have to come back and do an ordinance amendment to change the development agreement that has their name on it, or just is a more generic development agreement as opposed to a specific person that was in it.
So we're really not just starting at step one, regardless, correct?
No, you don't have to do the public hearings and kind of process again if you're going to stay the way it is with the intent of
assisted living
or letting it be the zoning it is now, which is R4.
Okay, but any other change would require the full
correct
process.
Yes.
Thank you.
Intent of the development agreement referenced in ordinance number 015/2010 is to limit the allowed uses on the property to retirement housing assisted living in either single family houses or retirement home group homes.
Second.
Okay, motion was made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Cutback. Other comments? All right. This time we'll call for a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, motion passes 6-0. Thanks, Brad. City Administrator Brazel, I'll let you introduce this topic.
Okay. I'm going to actually pass a document around to everybody. This is a release of attorney-client privileged information to the Washington State Auditor. Process late Friday of last week, working with the Washington State Auditor's Office as they're conducting their annual audit, a question came up as to whether or not this topic was reviewed with legal counsel. At that time, I said it was, and I went through my correspondence with Attorney Lell, and I found this document, and it speaks to this particular topic. I do not have the authority as city administrator to release attorney-client privilege documents, and so I brought it forward to council this evening. I only need consensus to release it. Basically, we need documentation for the auditor. This fits that bill, but again, I don't have the authority to release it. Only council does, so it was suggested by Zach that I brought it forward this evening for consensus.
Was there any concern that he raised on this at all?
He did not have any concern. The other alternative was for me to put a memo together talking about this particular document, but that was a lot of work versus just bringing it forward to council and getting consensus.
Just need the agreement, you don't need a motion or anything?
I don't. I just need council consensus. I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. items. First item on the agenda is a legislative agenda. Mr. Brazel.
Thank you. We do this every year. This year it's a little different. I'll just speak to what we did last year. We worked with the cities and towns in Snohomish County, and we came up with a group effort legislative agenda that was put forward to Olympia. Following session, it was recommended that we actually work with Snohomish County and a few other organizations that I've listed here for this evening to come up with a joint document. And so before you this evening, we've got what we're calling the Regional Priorities for Snohomish County 2013 State Legislative Agenda. The reason to bring it forward this evening is to get in front of council so we have time to review it. We're not looking for action this evening, but I can speak to how well this played out. The group effort, I believe, we're going to see bigger dividends versus going in as just a group of cities. Snohomish County being on board, it talks about the transportation projects that we have throughout the Snohomish County, and you'll notice that the phase one of the Monroe Bypass is included in that. Economic Alliance is also involved. So again, I think that we're going to get better response when this makes it forward to Olympia. So I'm open for questions, comments. This will be coming back first meeting in December for council to take some action.
I see no lights, so okay. It was very self-explanatory.
Okay, great, thank you.
Right. Next item is the discussion for sewer rates for laundromats.
So we came back to talk to you about this in October. Mr. Johnson, the owner of the Monroe Laundry, has requested a reduced sewer rate due to the fact that some of the water that goes into his establishment evaporates when it hits the dryer and doesn't go to the wastewater treatment plant. You would send us off to see what other people had, what other cities or sewer districts have done. There's not a lot of people doing that right now. We have the city of Carnation, right?
Yeah.
Carnation doing it. Most of the other people said there's no policy, and there's a city of Arlington has the global, which is basically what we do. They just calculate different. They say only 90% of the water goes up. You know, we can do the same thing, but then raise rates by 10%. So it really doesn't have anything there. The only other one was that the city of Marysville has the 5% discount for coin-operated laundromats. And staff is recommending that you direct us to develop a new rate class for laundromats to charge a different rate. I can bring that forward to you, then you can make a decision at that time to adopt that or not. So any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Councilmember Campbell.
Thank you. I can't remember if we discussed other types of businesses that would be affected by this.
This exact one, nothing, but would it open up the floodgates of grocery stores saying, well, the water we missed on our vegetables evaporates too, and therefore we shouldn't be paying for that. You know, there is that slippery slope. The only, somebody mentioned that was a possibility, but the ones who were actually doing it didn't say that they, been flooded, they've been flooded by requests by other types of businesses asking for that same thing.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Do you have another question?
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
You can't.
So the motion you understand the
bill? I know, well, this is study session. So you can all nod your heads if you'd like to do it.
Next week.
I just go for consensus and then I can bring back something real.
Okay.
If they're ready for us to do something.
Councilmember Cutabat.
you know, I'm hesitant about doing it because I do think it opens the door. And just looking at, you know, other, not saying that we have to be similar to other cities, but looking at other cities and not really having a policy, and then looking at the amount, it doesn't really change the laundromat, the fee. And then looking at the possibility of, do we open the doors to, when do we draw the line and say, well, we looked at laundromats, but we're not looking at your business. And, you know, I just think that's dangerous. And then looking at, well, if we do that, if we do discounted rates for different businesses, what happens? We're going to have to raise the rates to others. So I'm hesitant about going down this path with only one business owner coming forward and asking for it, and then opening the gates to other possibilities. So I don't know if this is something we should be focusing our time and moving in that direction. That's my opinion.
I concur. I was going to say the same thing. I think we can move on to other things.
Mr. Camp.
One of the reasons why I believe you should follow this is because some of the examples given, the recent national testing results that are in the documentation received before and now, show that this, granted, it's small, but it is an issue. I think it should be considered. And granted, there's a possibility of the water mystery will be taken into account, but from the sound of it, it doesn't sound like it's going to be that severe of an issue, and we can deal with it. And I think that anything offers what's more the reality of how a business processes water and sewer, mm-hmm. I think it's worthwhile.
My comment is, I echo what Councilmember Ketabek said. I'm concerned about the potential for opening other, you know, I have the same concern every time I wash my car on my lawn when I'm watering my lawn and it's using up that water, yet I'm still paying the sewer rates. You know, it's not going into the sewer. And we've had other people come before council asking us to relook at the water rates and sewer structure, and it's a huge onion that we will start peeling layer after layer. My concern is not this as it stands, but it's the potential for it to be a never-ending, you know, us relooking at water rates for the next 12 months for various individuals or businesses. And so I can appreciate this, the laundromat asking for this. My concern is what it opens us up to. So I would say I'm on the hesitant side of this. So. Councilman Davis.
All right, not to make light of this, but I think this is brilliant. I've been looking for ways to get my water bill reduced for a couple of years now. Four daughters at home.
Good luck.
My dryer's running about 24/7. But I agree with you. I think this opens the door. Talking about the fear cost-wise, but we do set a precedent if we start opening that door. So I think we got to be collecting.
So consensus is a no. Seems. All right. Departmental reports. Ben, Jacob, Mr. Sachs, Chief, Sam, Brad, Councilman Cutabout.
I attended the Veterans Day ceremony on Sunday at the high school, and I just want to commend the individuals and the businesses that put that on. It was a
our survey. Second thing, people have asked about my father, police, fire chaplain. He's recovering well at home and goes in for the triple bypass surgery on Monday. It's coming Monday. So your prayers and support are very much appreciated. So we'll be probably returning home somewhere around Thanksgiving. So possibly we'll have an update the next time. The last thing is, my wife and I have been foster parents for a few years now. We have 9 children in our home, in and out. And number 8 and 9 that are with us now, we've had about a year and a half, and we actually have our court date for the adoption this coming Friday. So we're very, very thankful for that. And just thought,
I have nothing to report. Mr. Brazel.
Thank you. Draft agenda for November 20th, 2012. We have a consent agenda. Under new business, we have ordinance adopting the 2013 budget, first reading. Your final action, resolution approving preliminary subdivision, Dennis Edition. We have the draft agenda, November 27th, 2012, study session, if it isn't canceled, and that's under the staff reports. Executive session, pricing and property. Any additions or deletions?
This time, I think we have a need for an executive session, and I will let City Administrator Brazel cite the title.
Okay. Per RCW 4230-140-4B, this is for collective bargaining, and approximately 20 minutes.
Any action afterwards?